Hey everyone, I'm Dan Kortler, the host of TED Climate. Each episode, we unpack the problems and solutions of climate change. This season of the show, we're getting into some big ideas that make us optimistic about the future, like meat grown from cells and leather made from mushrooms. And the best part? We look at how building a greener future can be an upgrade instead of a sacrifice. Find and follow TED Climate wherever you're listening to this.
This is a CBC podcast.
I have just one word for you. Are you listening? Plastics. Yeah, I am riffing from that famous line in the 1967 film The Graduate, starring none other than Dustin Hoffman. But what wasn't said in the movie is that the promise of plastic also comes with a downside. Piles of trash in parks and on beaches, and mountains of plastic waste that could get as big as an island in the Pacific Ocean. So, on a windy day in April, a group of elementary school students in Montreal went down to the shoreline to pick up as much plastic as each of them could. And they sure found a lot.
A dog shoe.
What else?
We found a coffee cup.
What? Yeah, there's a lot of foam in here.
A bunch of foam.
Is this a good thing that you guys are doing?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a great thing.
Yeah. It's a great thing.
And when in the highways when we were coming, there was a lot of trash everywhere.
And
stuck
on the trees. It makes us mad.
Makes them mad. Those are some students from St. George's Elementary School in Montreal. So this all begs the question, where on earth does all the plastic garbage come from? Tony Walker, I gather you may have some idea about which companies are producing a lot of stuff that ends up being discarded around the world.
Absolutely. And just like those children in your intro clip, it makes me mad too. So, yeah, we did actually identify brands from companies on millions of items collected over 5 years. And yeah, we know who the top five are.
Okay, we'll get into that in just a second. You've published a paper on this. Before we go on, though, can you let our listeners know who you are?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Tony Walker. I'm a professor in the School for Resource and Environmental Studies in Dalhousie, Nova Scotia.
And I'm Laura Lynch, and this is What on Earth, where we bring you a world of climate solutions. And as world leaders have been gathering in Canada for a United Nations summit on how to end plastic pollution, we're going to talk about which companies are the worst offenders and what can be done about them. Tony Walker, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So you looked into which companies produce the most plastic waste. Can you briefly walk us through how you went about the research?
Yeah, sure. So this was a five-year study, which began in 2018 and ran through to 2022. It was actually a bit like your intro clip there with children, doing litter or beach cleanups. We actually identify the brand names or even symbols that also indicates a parent company on any items collected, items that were larger than 5 millimeters. And the study was really comprehensive. It included over 1,500 brand audit collections across 84 countries, 6 continents. And so it was really comprehensive. And we identified and collected over 2 million items.
Well, what did you find?
Well, of the 2 million items collected, we identified brands on 1 million items. But what it really boils down to is of the 50% of branded items that we collected, only 56 companies contribute to that 50%. And of course, we'll probably get to the top five in this interview.
Let's do that now.
Okay. So the top five producers of branded waste found in the environment. Number one is Coca-Cola Company. Number two, PepsiCo. Third, Nestle, Danone. And one that may not be familiar with many listeners, the fifth one was Altria. But they're the parent company for brands such as Kraft. And I'm sure many of your listeners would be familiar with the Kraft brand.
These all strike me as drinks-related companies. So are we talking about bottles?
It's mostly food and beverage. So if you imagine you've got a confectionery wrapper, you know, like Kit Kat or something like that, or a chocolate bar made by Nestle, you know, the parent company is in the very fine small print on the back. But yeah, it's mostly food and beverage, single-use plastic items.
So it's obvious by now that plastic pollution is a huge environmental problem, but I'm wondering if you can talk about how it's linked to climate change.
Oh, crikey, yeah. So, yeah, it's there's no doubt that this plastic pollution is a crisis. And as far as I know, there's no plastic pollution deniers. Unlike some climate change deniers, of course, there are a few of those. But what many listeners may not understand is roughly 98 to 99% of all consumer plastics currently in the marketplace are derived from fossil fuel feedstocks. So in other words, oil and gas, which we can identify as being, you know, part of the CO2 and greenhouse gas emissions contributing to climate change. In addition, plastic extraction, oil and gas extraction and plastic production and end of life also contributes to climate change in the region of, depending on which study you you want to take as gospel, between 6 and 15%. But it is projected to increase to 20% by 2030.
Now, if according to your research, more than half of branded plastic pollution could be traced back to just, what was it, just over 50 companies?
56, yeah.
56. How can you make the companies accountable for all of the waste that they've been creating?
Well, in where you're speaking from today in British Columbia, in the province, there's an extended producer responsibility program whereby some of the debris items or litter items in your garbage and recycling is actually, you know, now the responsibility of the producers. And so whilst that might be the case in British Columbia, we don't have an EPR system across Canada, not uniformly yet, and nor do we have one across the planet. So what this study really points to and indicates as a recommendation is we now have identified beyond any shadow of a doubt who the biggest producers are of debris items, plastic litter items in the environment. And so, you know, following the classic environmental management rule, the polluter pays, now we know which corporations should be held accountable to, well, first of all, to help foot the bill, but also to be responsible for producing better packaging in the first place, and also to eliminate those difficult to recycle packaging items like food wrappers that simply cannot be recycled in any jurisdiction.
CBC received statements from the top three companies named in your study, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Nestle. All three of them talk about making strides in recycling. And Coca-Cola says the company's aiming to make all of its packaging recyclable by next year. It also hopes to collect and recycle as many bottles and cans as it sells by 2030. Does recycling go far enough to address the problem?
Plastic recycling on its own is simply not enough in the face of so much increasing global plastic production. And yes, those claims, I mean, I'm also familiar with the statements made by Coca-Cola, and those lofty goals by next year are fantastic. However, what about there's so much legacy bottles already in the environment, and that's why we collected them. And so getting that ratio of recycling everything that they sell is great, but starting from when? So there are other solutions like the capping of production in the first place. It's like trying to mop up the bathroom with the tap still running on an overflowing bath. It's not really the solution. It's one solution, but it's not the only one.
Okay. We do know, though, that sometimes plastic is used because it's cheaper than alternatives like glass. It can keep things sterile, medical supplies and such, or even water distribution around the world. How important can plastic be in some cases?
Oh, it's absolutely essential. I'm in no doubt that plastics are going to be here for some time, but it's the consumer plastics, the single-use plastics, which have become notoriously commonplace in the environment, just like the children were saying how mad they are to see it in the environment, because they are so difficult to recycle. And yes, there are essential plastic items that we do need for modern society, like piping potable water, from the treatment plants to all of our domestic residences. And that's fine. That's perfectly essential. But we are talking about those non-essential and difficult to recycle or problematic plastics. And I think that's the part of the problem.
Now, the Canadian government has announced a strategy that requires all producers to keep track of exactly how much plastic they put in the Canadian market and where it ends up. What do you think of that?
That's great. It really is consistent in terms of the ask of the international community. And in the case of Canada, it's now going to require and mandate companies to report on quantities produced and what they do at the end of life.
But help me here, because I don't understand how that actually reduces the amount of plastic that they're putting out.
Well, it's a regulatory tool. It's a mechanism by which the government can find out who the biggest producers are in terms of like quantities. But if then the math is, the balance sheet doesn't really add up, then of course you've got a missing portion that's either being landfilled or a missing portion to the environment. And that's where the government can use regulation to kind of control that leakage.
Are you concerned at all about whether there's a real ability to police that kind of regulation? Or are you just going to trust the corporations?
In an ideal world, if it's voluntary reporting and self-reported, whilst it's difficult to regulate, it is reported and publicly available information. And as consumers, we can decide where to buy our products in the future if a company is failing to adhere to regulations.
Okay, let's pull back a little bit farther. A binding treaty on plastic pollution will ideally be finalized later this year in Korea. What are you hoping the agreement will accomplish?
Well, the devil's in the detail. And whilst there's many countries, Canada included, I think the current number is 65 or 66 high ambition countries or high ambition coalition, of which Canada is a member. And those countries are really pushing for a very stringent, legally binding plastics treaty. And then there are others in between. And then there are other countries at the far end of the spectrum who do not want a legally binding stringent regulations, and they do not want caps on production. They also happen to be petroleum producing countries. So one of the things that could jeopardize having an effective plastics treaty is how they vote in terms of member states, whether it's a majority or if it's consensus. If it has to be consensus, then all it takes is just one country to not vote for it, and effectively it doesn't go through. So I'm hoping that the high ambition philosophy for the plastics treaty does stick, and we do actually have a legally binding treaty by the end of this year.
Even if you do get that treaty, though, we know that from past experience, countries can withdraw from treaties, like Canada withdrew from the Kyoto Protocol. How much faith should people put in a treaty as a real climate solution?
Well, think of the Paris Agreement, and of course, that's not exactly been highly successful, has it? Because of targets that aren't mandatory and are voluntary, and then countries don't meet them. But so there's no real consequences other than saying, well, we didn't meet it this year, we'll try harder next year. But that really, in the face of climate change, we can't continue business as usual. And I think we don't need a Paris for plastics this time round either. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And those children in the clip in your intro, we really need to leave them a sustainable future, and one where plastic pollution isn't omnipresent.
Tony, I've got one last question for you. All that plastic that you collected to do your research, what did you do with it?
Like with many debris collections around the world, where it is possible to recycle if facilities exist. Remember, there's 84 countries and they're not all as equipped as Canada or, you know, in fact, Canada's not as equipped as other countries in Europe. Suffice to say, waste management facilities varied across those regions. So where possible, it was recycled, and where not, it was unfortunately landfilled. But that was still better than the alternative, which was left in the environment.
All right, Tony Walker, we will leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Cheers.
Paper or plastic?
Oh, I forgot my own bags. Plastic. No, wait, paper. Hang on, which one's better? I don't know.
Don't stress, Neil. The podcast Living Planet is here to help. We know you want to do what's right for the planet, but you're busy and you have to make 1,000 small decisions every day. So we endeavor to answer, what's better?
Cotton or polyester?
Tea or coffee?
For answers to these environmental conundrums and your questions, subscribe to Living Planet wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, here at What on Earth, we like to share practical tips for you, our listeners. And when one of you reached out with a question about something most, if not all, of you encounter in your day-to-day lives, we couldn't resist. The question? It's about doing the dishes and climate change. Producer Molly Siegel takes it from here.
When it's time to do the dishes, do you fill up a sink with hot water or load up a dishwasher?
Which is better water-wise or energy-wise? I'd just like to know. My name is Marion May, and I live in Ottawa. I'm 63 years old, and I've been washing dishes and loading dishwashers all of my life because I come from a very big family of 6 children, and it was my job, along with the other kids in the family, to load and unload the dishwasher.
She says back then, her family was one of the first on their street to actually own a dishwasher. But using it wasn't exactly straightforward.
It involved this huge hose that you'd hook up to the kitchen tap, and you'd move this big clunker of a dishwasher on wheels out from underneath the counter. You'd hook it up, and then you'd press start. But I remember one time it came off the tap, and we were sitting there watching TV and the water just poured through the ceiling.
Okay, so not water conserving. Currently, Marion doesn't have a dishwasher, and that's by choice.
I detest the sound of a dishwasher. That's why I really like to hand wash dishes, and I find it very therapeutic. I use the hottest water possible and my lovely pink washing gloves.
Whether or not it's actually a better choice for the climate is a live debate in her family. So I'm going to find the answer for her.
I'm Sarah Riddell. I'm a policy research associate in focusing on clean heat with Efficiency Canada, and I'm based in Hamilton, Ontario.
And I put Marion's question to her. Which is better for the planet, washing dishes by hand or using a dishwasher?
As long as you are generally filling your dishwasher, not just putting in a couple of forks and a spoon, it is much better to use the dishwashers.
Sarah says if you were to hand wash the equivalent amount of dishes as a fully loaded dishwasher, you would end up using about 100 liters of water. Now, compare that to an efficient dishwasher.
You'd only use as little as about 11 liters compared to the 100 with hand washing, so you can save a lot of water and energy using a dishwasher.
Both your tap and your dishwasher use hot water. So Sarah explains if you use less water to do the dishes, it also means you use less energy to heat that water up. And that 11 liters that Sarah is referring to is when you're using an Energy Star certified dishwasher. That's a U.S.-based certification for energy efficiency that's administered by the Environmental Protection Agency and partners with companies. The efficiency standards for Energy Star dishwashers were just recently updated, and they are actually stricter than the ones the Canadian government has set, meaning that if you are on the market for a dishwasher, Energy Star ones use the least amount of water and energy. Sarah says the Canadian government's own efficiency standards for dishwashers haven't actually been updated since 2013, and they're lagging behind some other countries.
In 2019, the Prime Minister had a mandate letter to the Minister of Natural Resources listing making Energy Star certification mandatory for all new home appliances, including dishwashers, starting in 2022 as a top priority. But unfortunately, there was pushback from the home appliance industry.
Pushback from the industry because the more efficient models cost more. Their new technology allows them to use one batch of hot water continuously, and they use sensors to tell when dishes are clean. The federal government will be updating its standards for dishwashers in 2027, when the U.S. rules also come into effect. But for now, Sarah says there are about 400 different Energy Star models available in Canada. If you do have an old dishwasher, it's still worth fully loading that up and running it versus hand washing your dishes. But if you don't have one and you aren't in a position to buy one, the most efficient way to hand wash is to fill a sink with hot water and a second sink basin or bowl with clean water for rinsing. With this information, it's time to check in with our listener, Marion. Hey, are you ready for the answer?
I'm really, really hoping dishwashing by hand is better because I don't want to give it up. But yes, I'm ready. I feel like I'm on a game show.
So the dishwasher is better.
Oh, no. Well, I don't know. I guess that's good.
She's open to the idea.
Wow. That has me convinced that we should be moving towards getting probably an apartment-sized dishwasher for two people. When you have guests over, that'll be really nice to throw them in the dishwasher. Not the guests, the dishes. Thanks for looking into it for me. I'm going to go out and get a dishwasher now.
For What on Earth, I'm Molly Siegel.
Thanks, Molly. I love Marion. I'm glad she's not throwing her guests in the dishwasher. That taught me a lot that I did not know about what the dishwasher does versus hand washing. And I also make sure when I use my dishwasher, I fill it up because I live alone. And I use a short cycle on the dishwasher, too, because I find that's just fine for getting the dishes clean. So it's good to know that that is the right way to go. And I think that perhaps Marion will get used to using a dishwasher, and they're so much quieter now, I don't think that'll bother her either. So we do love to answer your questions. If you have a climate dilemma in your life, just let us know. We have dug into everything from what to do with those torn up jeans or worn out bed sheets that you just don't want to throw in the trash, to how to prepare for wildfire evacuations. What do you want help with? Email us, earth@cbc.ca. And better yet, because we love to hear your voice, send us a voice memo. The email again is earth@cbc.ca. Remember, you can listen to all of our episodes on demand at CBC Listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We are dropping two new podcasts every week. While you're there, leave us a review. We do read them. That's all for us. The show is put together by Andy Mullins, Jake Costello, Danielle Piper, Vivian Luck, Rachel Sanders, Molly Siegel, Matthias Wolfson, and Catherine Rolfson. Special thanks to Allison Cole, Anand Ram, and Gabriel Gindi. I'm Laura Lynch. Thank you for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.